It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Eight Democratic candidates continue to battle for the Democratic nomination in the race to become Pennsylvania's next governor. As Essential Pittsburgh continues its series of interviews with the candidates, today we welcome Katie McGinty to the program. Ms. McGinty worked as an advisor to Vice President Al Gore and became a key environmental advisor to President Bill Clinton. Later, she served as Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection in the cabinet of Governor Ed Rendell. She joins us now in Studio A. Katie McGinty, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, it's great to be here.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, Democratic candidate for governor, Katie McGinty, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Tonight, as you well know, the president will deliver his State of the Union address, and he's expected to make economic disparity an integral part of his State of the Union address. Pennsylvania, which he will visit tomorrow, he's scheduled to be in Pittsburgh, is the state with the fourth highest number of long-term unemployed. How would you address that situation here in the state if you became governor? What would you do to create jobs?
Well, listen, Paul, I think this is really on the cutting edge in terms of what is now our problem in Pennsylvania, but also our huge opportunity. You know, it wasn't long ago that we were seventh in the country in job creation. Today, under Governor Corbett's leadership, we have fallen at one point to 49th in the country. Now, how can that be when we're sitting in an economy like we see here in Pittsburgh with innovation, cutting-edge research? What we need to do is invest in those entrepreneurs and businesses that can grow new jobs and opportunities. On the issue of inequality that the president's going to highlight, you know, I think there's rich and fertile common ground. What if we took an approach that was growth-based? And I'm proud to be pushing an agenda today that's about, for example, tax cuts for hardworking, low-income families and increasing the minimum wage so that families have purchasing power again. If we restore wages, then the consumer can be an engine of growth, invest in entrepreneurs, give people purchasing power, and Pennsylvania can be number one again.
We have a Twitter comment from Jordan who wants to know, speaking of minimum wage, what your position is. You're saying you want to see the minimum wage raised. What would be if you had the power to do that or to work with a legislature that was on board with you, what do you think that the minimum wage should be raised to?
Well, you know, maybe a more accurate word even would be to restore the minimum wage in real terms. We are way below where we would have been even in 1968. If we added the cost of inflation to what the minimum wage was then, we'd be talking $10 an hour. Now, I've put a proposal out to start now at $9 an hour and then automatically to increase with the rate of inflation. And I think that's important to get it out of politics and just keep wages real. Here's another thing that I think is important. Some people will be moved to say, yes, we need to pay a decent salary to people because it's right. It's the right thing to do. And it's wrong for hardworking people to be living in poverty. If that's not your bag, just think about it economically. Economists are telling us hands down that this recovery has been lackluster, specifically because wages are not keeping pace. So if you just want to look at it in dollars and cents terms, our economic growth depends on our paying people a decent livable wage.
Let's move on to the environment. Just over a week ago on the eastern side of the state, when seven cars in a train derailed in Philadelphia on a bridge over the Schuylkill River and Schuylkill Expressway, six of the derailed cars carried crude. One of them, plus a boxcar, were left leaning over the bridge. It was a close call. It could have ended up like the runaway oil train that exploded in Quebec and killed 47 people last July. As a former DEP secretary, what would you do to ensure that the increasing number of trains carrying crude oil through Pittsburgh and across the state aren't a danger to people and the environment?
Yes. Well, there's two things. And one that I would really ask the governor to step up in an urgent basis. We should be rerouting these trains away from densely populated areas. The federal government has now strongly recommended that. And some in the industry have stood up and said that's absolutely a good idea. So it takes some leadership to get that done. Safety first. But second, I think there's an economic opportunity for us. And here's where when you push tough regulations that are smart, you can create new businesses. What's the business? Well, what if Pennsylvania got in the lead of building the new tanker cars that are double or triple lined that are resistant to the kind of explosive situation we've seen in other areas of our country and in Canada, as you referenced? Let's get in front of this. Safety first, but then be smart about it. The locomotive industry had been a big part of Pennsylvania's manufacturing base. A new generation of cleaner, safer trains could put people to work.
412-246-2002, if you have a comment or question for our guest, Democratic candidate for Governor Katie McGinty. Let's go to Steve in Bethel Park. Steve, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, I'm excited to be on. Thank you for taking my call. And hi, Katie. How are you?
Well, hi, Steve.
Hey, I just wanted to ask a quick question. I'm a teacher, and you know, as a teacher, I'm sure anybody that's affiliated or involved in education has noticed the severe, drastic cuts to education in this state and how they have negatively affected education. You know, it's very, very apparent the change, you know, prior to Governor Corbett being in office, and you know, now where we're headed. And I wanted to know how you're going to change the course of the ship. You know, how are you going to take us back to where we are with that positive progress and keep us, you know, funded, giving us what we need to teach the students and do right by them in Pennsylvania.
Steve, thank you for your service. And as a mom with three girls in the public schools, I very much value our teachers and the passion and the skill that our teachers bring into the classroom. I think it was a terribly wrong choice for the governor to have cut $1 billion out of public education. It hurts our kids today, and it absolutely destroys our competitiveness as a state going forward. Businesses will not come here if we don't have a well-trained workforce.
Let me, if I may interrupt for just a moment. Did in fact the governor cut $1 billion from the education budget, or was it money that went away after the stimulus money ran out?
The stimulus money did run out, but the stimulus was provided as temporary relief to insure against cuts. The governor did was to decide against, for example, a proposal that was supported by Republicans and Democrats to impose a reasonable severance tax and to have those dollars to dedicate to important priorities like education. And in fact, one of the first proposals that I put out in this campaign would be to do just that, to impose a reasonable severance tax and dedicate it dollar for dollar to restore the $1 billion that the governor chose to take out of public education.
But I guess, again, I would come back to the idea of that the governor cut education funding. I mean, isn't it, with all due respect, disingenuous to say that he took away money that was only there temporarily?
Well, listen, the general fund budget is $28 billion or so. That budget is up to the governor every year to decide in terms of where his or her, hopefully, priorities lie. And the governor decided not to put any of those $28 billion into making up for the loss of the stimulus dollars. But it was particularly unacceptable choice to make because, one, the governor inherited a $1.4 billion revenue surplus as certified by the Independent Financial Office. And second, he decided not to support, again, new revenue measures that were supported by bipartisan consensus.
412-246-2002 to the number to call. Thank you, Steve, in Bethel Park. Teachers are home today because of the cold. There's no school. So nice to have some input from somebody working in education. Let's go to Nick in the North Hills. Nick, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon. I was wondering, what would you plan? What are your ideas for bringing more corporations back to Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania in general? Pittsburgh used to be the number three corporate headquarters in the United States. Now we're almost a backwater town. And the same thing goes for all Pennsylvania. What would your plans be to bring them from lower income or tax states such as Texas, Florida, and Delaware to come in and bring their home back to Pittsburgh again?
Thanks so much for the question. And I would start first with a vision. And the vision is that no place in the United States should be competing for and winning those very businesses that you're describing more than Pennsylvania. Why? No state has the combination of the energy and water resources that we have, the terrific workforce that we have. Here in Western Pennsylvania, I know firsthand, strong work ethic, incredibly capable and talented workforce. Plus, these industries now are high-tech and knowledge-based industries. So when we have the Carnegie Mellons and the Pitts that provide that kind of technology together with our location, it's a winning formula. Pennsylvania can and should be leading this renaissance in manufacturing that we see happening in the United States. Now, in terms of making sure we compete and win, one, you have to invest in education. Two, you have to invest in infrastructure. Beyond that, I've proposed a tax cut. Let's bring down the corporate net income tax rate, which is now very high compared to other states, but do it in a revenue-neutral way by simultaneously closing the Delaware loophole. I think that's a recipe for success that will enable us to reach the potential we should have to compete and win for businesses in the country and be the center for things like high-tech manufacturing.
Thank you for the call, Nick. And Greg from Pittsburgh wanted us to relay a question to you, Katie McGinty, and he was wondering if you support the film tax credit. Pittsburgh has been a destination for filmmakers of late, and a film tax credit would help to encourage more of that.
Yeah, and let me expand the point, if I can, from film tax credit maybe to the culture and the arts more broadly. These are areas that when we put a spotlight on them and support them through tax incentives, et cetera, can help us to continue to rebrand Pennsylvania as a place that is young, diverse, on the cutting edge, a place that offers high quality of life. I think Pittsburgh has done such an exceptionally good job of rebranding itself to the country and the world market. And we need to do that as a commonwealth as a whole. And I think the arts, things like attracting films that might throw positive spotlight on Pennsylvania, are an incredibly important part of a strategy that will move us forward and have people, families, businesses wanting to come here.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Democratic candidate for Governor Katie McGinty. If you have a comment or question, you can join us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. I wanted to get back to energy. Where do you believe that Marcellus Shale fits into our future energy picture? And what concerns do you have, Ms. McGinty, about shale drilling's impact on air and water?
So when I had the privilege of serving as Secretary of Environmental Protection, we took energy as one of our top priorities. But, Paul, we went forward in a way that said, listen, we need to diversify our energy resources. And by the time I had left office, it wasn't California, it wasn't Massachusetts, it was Pennsylvania that was number one in the country in renewable energy manufacturing. We were number one in wind, number two in solar. Now, what about gas? Well, gas is another incredibly important resource, and we should use it, too, in a responsible way. And that means we need much greater environmental cop on the beat. We need to have tougher regulations. We need to have zoning in terms of where gas can and can't go in terms of the development of it. But what I'd like to see is, one, gas to be not the only energy source that we're interested in, but part of a mix that includes efficiency and renewables. And second, that let's not just produce the gas here and then see it go out of state or out of country. Let's use the gas to support value-added high-tech industries in Pennsylvania. Chemicals, pharmaceuticals, life sciences, these are all industries that actually don't necessarily burn gas for energy. What they do is they use it cleanly as a feedstock to build those value-added products. I am concerned that in the last couple of years, we have fallen from 3 and 4 jobs in the Marcellus going to Pennsylvanians to today 1 and 2. That's the wrong direction. We want to capture the value add and make sure we're creating jobs that are paying Pennsylvanians good wages and responsibly benefiting from our natural resources.
How should the Marcellus shale industry be taxed?
Well, I have a specific proposal that I've put forward, and that proposal is essentially built on the same formula that West Virginia uses. To take away any argument that we would destroy our competitiveness if we impose a shale tax, I deliberately shaped my proposal to be less of a tax than what West Virginia imposes. Even if you do that, today it would represent about $700 million of additional revenue for key priorities like education. Over 10 years, even with conservative assumptions, that would grow to about $1.8 billion a year of money that we could use again for infrastructure, for education, for the key priorities that can keep our economy growing.
And you mentioned zoning laws, and in a victory for local zoning laws, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, as you know, declared major pieces of Act 13, the state's oil and gas law, unconstitutional. The governor has asked for a reconsideration of the decision. Should there be more local control over shale gas drilling?
I put out a statement asking the governor not to continue to use tax dollars to try to shut Pennsylvanians out of having a role in our future. That provision was constitutional. It was clearly held by the state Supreme Court. Let's get about the business of enabling citizens responsibly to engage in the future of their community. That's what zoning is about. And that's a key part of keeping our communities alive and well, that people care enough to be engaged. I also have called on the governor to be part of the equation of taking out that provision of Act 13 that imposed a gag order on physicians if they're concerned that there are health impacts. That's not fitting a democracy to have a provision like that, and it should never have been in that law. Let's look to the kind of regulations we need to protect our air, our land, and our water to ensure responsible development. And sure, let's make sure citizens have a seat at the table in charting the future of where this industry, just like every other industry, has been subject to those reasonable zoning requirements.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Ken from Bellevue. Ken, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Ms. Beginti's comment regarding tank cars, safer tank cars, got my attention. I was just remembering Pittsburgh's, in the Pittsburgh area's history in rail car production. There used to be at one time Pullman cars being made up in Butler, and of course Westinghouse Air Brake had a big operation in Pittsburgh. And I think it's a very good idea that she had, and I think it's something that we can capitalize on in this region. And if the time ever comes in this country for high-speed rail, that's also another potential industry that Pittsburgh could get on top of. So I'll just take my the comment off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I had two things in mind in making the comment. One was in Erie, Pennsylvania, we had a big General Electric locomotive facility. It's still there, but we lost a significant number of jobs there. Boy, if we were in front of this kind of issue, cleaner trains, safer trains, we could have driven new jobs and kept that plant humming at full tilt and full power. Second place where my thought comes from is, you know, for 25 years I've been in the hot seat on environmental issues with a lot of people trying to say you have to choose between jobs and the environment. I've always thought that that was a false choice. I think when you're smart about tackling tough issues, opportunity comes from that. And that's what I'd like to see Pennsylvania getting in front of these kinds of issues to grow our economy.
Let's work in one more call from Greg in Pittsburgh. Greg, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Katie McGinty.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wonder if you will give your input on making things easier for the truck drivers. Pennsylvania is one of the few states as a truck driver that if you're on the turnpike, they only take cash. Me being a truck driver, I travel a lot of states. Most places take credit or cash. And as a truck driver, it's hard sometimes to go for the cash for riding the toll road. Why is Pennsylvania behind the times, and will you change it?
Well, listen, I appreciate the comment and thought, and one of my six brothers was a truck driver, so the comment's near and dear to my heart. What I'd love to do is fix that and make sure that our hardworking truck drivers out there can have the most efficient way possible to ply our roads, if you will, and I'd work on it as a priority, and I appreciate your input.
Thank you for the call, Greg. A couple more issues I wanted to make sure that we covered. Let's talk about gay marriage. Last summer, Attorney General Kathleen Kane opted against defending the state's ban on same-sex marriage because she considers it, in her words, wholly unconstitutional. Her sentiment, of course, echoes those of the U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, who chose not to defend the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. What do you think of how Kathleen Kane handled this?
Well, listen, I hope that Pennsylvania can come to this decision in a way that is driven by respect for Pennsylvanians, which means to honor fairness and equality in basic rights like marriage. I hope we don't have to go kicking and screaming as the governor seems to want us to, with a court ordering us to do the right thing, to be on the right side of the law and the right side of history. I'm with Kathleen Kane for sure on this, and the Supreme Court and all of the other courts in the land who have now been very, very clear on this issue.
So you're saying it's time to legalize gay marriage in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. Marriage equality, fairness, basic human rights.
Also, the Corbett administration has on several occasions prodded UPMC and Highmark to resolve their dispute on future coverage. Has Governor Corbett, in your opinion, done enough on this? How do you come out on this issue? What would you do to resolve it?
You know, patience is sometimes a virtue, except for when it's not. And on this one, I would not be patient. And I don't feel that the governor has been nearly hands-on enough. These are incredibly important institutions. This fight has meant that people have gotten hurt. People are scared whether they'll be able to access the doctor that they trust. It's unacceptable. As governor, I would have UPMC and Highmark in a room. No one would leave until this was resolved. You know, order pizzas, whatever you got to do, but nobody's going home until this kind of misbehavior just stops. These institutions need to get back to being the charitable institutions whose mission and mandate is to serve people, and that's not what we have seen.
Last but not least, one of your Democratic competitors in the race for governor, John Hanger, has come out in favor of full legalization of marijuana. Other states have done this. What should Pennsylvania do?
Well, Paul, our family, as I said, I'm ninth of 10 kids. And unfortunately, I sat by the bedside of my brother, lost him to lung cancer, and my sister to brain cancer. So I've seen human pain and suffering. And my heart breaks for families who are seeing that with them, themselves, their children, et cetera. If there is a role, a medical necessity for marijuana to address those problems, then I want to be for that and provide that solace to those families and those individuals. But I, beyond that, do not support the full legalization of recreational marijuana. I do support decriminalizing the use of marijuana. And I think it is also a tragedy, the number of young people whose lives are being destroyed through minor nonviolent offenses. Once they're sent to prison, that on their record, destroying their opportunities for jobs, etc. We've got to change that. You know, our prison population is the largest in the world. We see African Americans five times as likely to be locked up because of marijuana. Every bit of that needs to change. And I would support that decriminalizing of marijuana. And I would support providing marijuana where there is a medical necessity.
And in fact, the legislature is taking that up today. So if that bill came to your desk, you would sign it?
If it was a bill that would decriminalize, I would sign it. If it was a bill that provided for medical necessity, I would sign it.
Our guest has been former state DEP Secretary Katie McGinty, Democratic candidate for governor. Ms. McGinty, thank you so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Coming up, we'll talk with U.S. Olympic women's bobsledder, Western Pennsylvania native Lauren Williams, when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.